Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
And this is Maxine Marcellini, and my co-host will be on with me in just a moment here. And we are having a little bit of technical difficulties today. I believe the station has finally figured out our glitches, and we are about ready to begin our interview today. So, get some microphones opened up here. Welcome, Jeannie.
Welcome.
Hi,
how
Rick.
Are you?
Is Rick not there? Nope, Joe is with us again. We are all set. Thank you, Joe, for getting us straightened out today. Okay.
Oh, you're very welcome. Right. Should you guys need anything else, just let us know.
Okay, we shall. Thank you so much. All right, we'll just wait for Rick to come on. Well, that was quite an exciting start to the program today. We couldn't get in the station. We got in. We couldn't get microphones working. We had bad static. And now Joe has taken care of it. Our knight in shining armor has come to our rescue.
And are we live on air, Maxine? I don't even know.
You are on air. I'm hearing you.
I thought so.
Okay. Yep. We're back to our normal look at things now, and I imagine Rick Johnson will be joining us in just a couple more minutes. So.
Yeah, he'll call in a minute.
Kind of a rough start. So
interesting
day,
day.
Yeah.
I sort of liked the sound of that, all that static and blurry at the first. I don't think I've ever heard anything quite like it.
That was awful. And it was. They got it fixed. Thank you, Lord.
I know.
Other than that, how are we? Well, it's a warm, sunny day here in Portland, and we are in the midst of very warm weather for this part of the Northwest. But I'm liking it. Mm-hmm. I'm liking it.
Yes, I do too. I will admit, my sister sent me a picture of some storms in the Midwest, a video, a short one, and I thought, oh, that looks kind of nice. But
no,
they've been
having way too many storms throughout the
Midwest. Oh, I know. It's terrible. Oh. She said it's over and over, yes.
Oh, golly. I hope that ends for them soon.
I do, too. Well, they've had such a bad drought, though, that it's kind of nice to get the rain, I suppose.
Yeah,
but,
as long as it's not so much flooding. That's been interesting.
Yeah, no.
So today's guest, Jeannie, is going to be a man by the name of Rick Johnson. And we're going to be talking about men. We're going to talk about the power of a man. If we can get Rick back on, we're going to let him talk to us a little bit about it, too. So,
he might know more about it than we do. What do you think?
He probably does. He probably does. Yeah. And he's more of an expert in that field, too. So it's going to be kind of a subject that's needed because a lot of men today aren't quite sure what their roles ought to be. There's so much going on with the programming on the televisions and just the fact that there's not been really good role models for them to look at growing up in some cases, that they're a little bit confused about who they are.
And, you know, it's really hard to be a good dad if you didn't have one and if you've never seen it, if you didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Same with
it makes it
anything.
Difficult.
Yeah. You know what my pastor, the late Ron Mell, used to say? He used to say, if you didn't have a good role model growing up, find somebody who excels in that area and ask them if you can hang out with them, even as an adult. And then just copy what they do. That's a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know my husband himself ended up with a male mentor, later in his life, really, when he was about in his 40s and 50s. And
wow.
It made a big difference to him because the guy was really a godly man. Let me let Rick in.
Yes.
Rick, are you there?
I am. How are you guys doing?
Welcome.
Well, we're thanking God we finally got the system running right.
We're here. Yes.
Welcome to our show.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Isn't it always fun that pretty much whatever can go wrong usually does go wrong with technology?
Oh, well, today it certainly
yes.
did. We've never had that kind of a staticky mess going on and where we couldn't open up the microphones. And, boy,
that kind
at least
of stuff follows
me
all over the country. So.
Oh, it's his fault, Maxine.
Okay, it's the Rick concept that's coming at us, huh?
Mm-hmm.
The Rick factor.
Well,
but
we're glad
Rick,
you're here anyway, Rick.
Thank you
My
for
pleasure,
being
yeah.
being patient with us as we work through that, and the station's
yeah.
given us back all our time and such. So, let me introduce you, Rick. Rick is the founder of Better Dads, a fathering skills program based on the urgent need to empower men to lead and serve in their families and their communities. His books have expanded his ministry now to include influencing the whole family. Life-changing insights for men and women on parenting and marriage and personal growth. Inspiring and equipping through innovative multimedia presentations and seminars, Rick's a guy in pretty high demand. His resources, methods, and personal approach have been transforming the lives of men, women, and their families for more than 12 years now. Rick speaks at many large conferences across the U.S. and Canada, including MOPS International, Promise Keepers in Canada, Design for Living Women's Conferences, Iron Sharpens Iron Men's. He's a popular keynote speaker in men's and women's retreats and conferences on parenting and marriage, and a nationally recognized expert in several areas, having been asked to deliver papers at venues such as the County of Los Angeles Child Abuse Prevention Conference and the State of New York Fatherhood Conference. His work with men and fathers was recognized when he was invited to the White House as part of the Champions of Change ceremony in 2012. That's exciting. What was that all about,
mm-hmm.
Rick?
It was pretty exciting. The current administration invited probably 40-some people from around the country who were kind of known for doing a lot of work in the areas of helping fathers and men, and just kind of acknowledged the work that they were doing, helped to kind of encourage them and maybe bring together some people to meet who hadn't met each other before. And, yeah, I was very honored to be there. It was a very, you know, excellent situation and probably one once-in-a-lifetime kind of an opportunity. So,
did you feel like you learned from the other men there?
I learned some stuff. I made some great connections. It was interesting to me how much grant money is actually being directed toward fathers' fatherhood issues. In fact, I'm involved in a federal fatherhood grant right now that is making a huge difference in the lives of many families.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay,
that is.
Rick, what do you mean by a title called The Power of a Man? What did you have in mind when you wrote that book?
Well, as you guys know, authors seldom have control over the title or the cover of their books. So that really wasn't my working title.
Well,
I wasn't
going to say that.
What was it? What was your title? What did you want?
Well, my working title is actually A Stand-Up Guy.
Ooh,
and that was kind of what I was, and probably still my favorite book I've written. It was my, not so much my take on authentic masculinity, maybe as my journey to try to discover authentic masculinity and what that looks like and some of the mistakes and challenges. You know, I was raised in an alcoholic home. I didn't have a real good role model for a father growing up. And so, like many men in our culture, I was kind of faced as I grew up, you know, first of all, when are you a man? And I get that asked by many young men, especially, I don't feel like a man. When will I know if I'm a man? Secondly, what my roles are as a man, as a husband, as a father, what does that look like? And you know, part of the challenge, I think, for a lot of men is if we don't know what our roles are in those situations, we run the risk of failing. And to fail as a man is unacceptable. And so a lot of men will avoid those circumstances, sometimes subconsciously, sometimes consciously, if they think that there's a possibility that they might fail.
How did you figure out how to do it right, Rick?
Well, I came to Christ at 40, at the age of 40. And so I think there was a long struggle prior to that. After that decision, you know, there was a ton of wisdom in the Bible, of course, but I got some distant role models. For instance, the pastor of the church that I attended was a former Green Beret, just a real man's man, and there was a lot of authentically masculine men that attended that church. And so it allowed me to get into groups, study groups, learn from other men, and I think that was key to it. That was, for me, that opened up a whole new horizon, a whole new window of what it is to be a man, because before that, I didn't have anybody to, you know, no mentors, nobody to look up to, nobody to teach me. You know, you're kind of relegated in that situation to what you see in the movies and television, and those are pretty poor examples of what a man is like.
Yeah.
So why is it important for a man to come to the point where he really understands what a man should be?
Well, again, I think that's the ultimate question that we have for ourselves as men. Like I said, I have a lot of young men that approach me after seeing me speak at a conference, and they're really struggling, and they're, you know, the questions are, am I a man? How do I know that? What does that look like? And I actually mentor quite a few young men. I say young men, some of them are 30, you know, early 30s, young to me anyway, but, you know, and they're struggling mightily, and they're directionless, they're aimless, they don't, they're not really living lives of significance, which they yearn to do, but they don't know what that looks like. They don't know how to approach it. Some of them have made terrible mistakes. They've abandoned their families. They've had children out of wedlock that they're not involved with, and some of that is because that's what was modeled for them, and so they're just repeating that cycle of what was modeled, what they observed growing up. Is if they don't have anything else to fill that, they'll follow in the footsteps that were modeled for them.
How did you happen to find these men that you've mentored? I ask that because if there's someone out there listening who is a man who needs a mentor, or a woman who knows of a man who needs a mentor, did they ask you? Did you find them and meet them personally? How did that happen?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I think men have to come. They have to be willing to be teachable. And if I try to go talk to somebody, they don't want to listen to it. But if
you're
they
not
ask,
a man, yeah,
that's another thing. And so, for instance, one young man had read this book and had looked on the back and found out that I lived in the Portland area, and he's like, "Wow, that's where I'm at." And so he emailed me and said, "You know, my parents. I'm from Nigeria. My parents were killed in a car accident when I was 17, and I'm struggling."
Mm-hmm.
A, assimilating to this culture, and B, understanding that final step that it takes to be a man. And so then he came to one of my workshops, and I've had several of the men, as I said, with this fatherhood grant, that after we've spoke, they've contacted me and said, "You know, I'm really struggling, and is there any place you can direct me to get some more information on how to step forward and be the kind of man that I want to be?" And mm-hmm. so I've kind of said, "Yeah, well, we can, you know, we can talk or meet by phone or meet for a coffee or something like that a couple of times a month." And that's kind of the process. It's not me relating some great wisdom as much as it is them expressing things and then maybe me giving the benefit of my experience in different situations. And really a lot of it, I think, to be perfectly honest, I think it's just an older man telling a younger man, "Hey, you know, you're all right. You're going to make it. It's, you know, you're doing good, keep going." Just that kind of encouragement, I think, a lot is really important.
Yeah, I agree. Rick, in this Power of a Man book, you've got a contract for men. Mm-hmm. Could you explain that contract? And I mean, you've kind of written
important.
Out kind of a code.
Yeah, I thought it was important for guys who read the book, maybe that were touched by the concept of it, behind it, to kind of have something to hold themselves accountable, if you will, or maybe even as a group. I've had tons of men's groups around the country that have used this book for their study programs and guides. And so I just put together a little contract with some of the concepts in the book that I thought were important that a man reads and signs and maybe gives to his wife and children or puts up on the mirror in the bathroom just so that he can see. And I'll just read it real quick, and we can talk about each one of them or not, whatever you want to do. But the contract for men says, I believe that men were created to live lives of significance. I believe men are born with the magnificent ability to lift up the lives of those around him. I believe authentic masculinity can make a difference in the world. Because I believe that, I agree to abide by and live my life by the following code and to inspire those who follow in my footsteps to join me. Number one is a man is not passive, he takes initiative. Number two, a man uses his God-given influence to serve others. Three, a man defends those who are weaker than he stands for what is right. Four, a man protects and provides for his family. Five, a man bases his decisions on principles, not emotions. Six, a man is a spiritual leader of his family. Seven, a man protects all women and children. Eight, a man teaches those under his influence what he has learned. Nine, a man does not quit, no matter how tough things get. 10, a man is patient, affirming, kind, and loving to his family. And 11, a man is accountable to God and to other men. Hmm. And so I think, you know, if men are interested in understanding authentic masculinity, those 11 things right there are pretty things that they can step up, you know. Now, interestingly, I've had, you know, some criticism from more feminist type people that thought my work was pretty patriarchal and even oppressive to females, and that's not it at all. I have a daughter. I want the best for her. But I also know that if dads particularly aren't involved in the lives of their daughters, they suffer mightily.
Hmm. Which brings
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Maxine.
Well, that was a good segue into your father-daughter conference that's coming up. You've got an event happening pretty soon. Would you talk a little bit more on that concept?
Yeah, we are, and actually my daughter and I have spoke at several father-daughter conferences around the country somewhat similar to this. This will be our own, but and that's really interesting because our daughter was always a very strong-willed child while growing up, and during the teenage years, we really had a time with it. In fact, it was a bit touch and go there for a while, and so it's kind of neat now that she's, you know, turned the corner and is this great young adult woman, and we get an opportunity to speak together. But we're going to have our first annual father-daughter conference here in Portland, and it is going to be for dads and daughters 12 years and older. So, you know, virtually teenage daughters and even adult women who want to maybe heal a relationship with their dad or have a stronger relationship with their father. I talk to a lot of adult women that, you know, they have huge regrets because they never had a close relationship with their dad. They don't know him. And girls, over and over, I hear from them, you know, I just wish my dad would talk to me. I wish he would tell me the things that I, you know, that he's learned and that I need to know. And so this conference is really designed to do that. One of the really cool things that we're going to do, and I'll share this just with your listeners. This is not information that most people would be privy to, but we're going to have sessions where we'll have the fathers and daughters together, and then the next session they'll split apart, and so we'll have the girls in one room and the fathers in another room. And during the first session of the day, where we split them up. In with the girls, we're going to give the girls set up a bunch of mirrors, and we're going to have the girls look into the mirrors and write down on a piece of paper during a 5-minute time period, write down all the things that they see in that mirror. And past experience has shown that particularly teenage girls tend to write down horrible things like I'm fat, I'm ugly, and those are the messages that our culture gives to young girls. And at the same time, I'm going to be having the dads, and I'm going to be saying, you know, when you think about your daughter, what are some things that you think about her? And I'm going to have them write them down. And inevitably, the dads always write these wonderful things about their daughter. They may be things that dads never say to them before.
Mm.
And then at the end of the day, when we do our final session, is a father-daughter blessing. I'll be on stage, and I will give my daughter a father blessing, and it's a very powerful ceremony, and she will accept it, and then I will have the girls hand their dads the notes that they had written when they looked in the mirror, and have their dads read them, and then I will tell the dads, look, you know, the only thing that can offset those messages that are in your daughter's heart, that are whispering in her ear, are the words of her father. You know, God has given fathers the power to be able to be the only ones to offset that kind of nonsense that the culture speaks into these girls' hearts. And then I'm going to have the dads do a blessing for their daughter. And it's just a powerful, powerful ceremony. These girls, there's a lot of tears shed. There's a lot of weeping and a lot of happy situations as these fathers and daughters mend relationships and grow closer together. So we're excited about it.
Oh, I love that.
September 28th, it's Saturday from 8:30 to 2:30.
Okay, you know what strikes me as where will it be?
It is at a church in North Portland called Life Change Community Center. And if you go to our website, betterdads.net, at the bottom of the homepage is a link to register for the event.
What I would like to know is, the way it sounds, it's like people go for healing, but is there a place there, and would it be beneficial for fathers and daughters who think they have a really great relationship to go?
It is, and I think, like I said, it just draws them closer together. For instance, some of the things that we talk about will be communication, and we'll do some exercises that will facilitate that communication, because especially during the teen years, even if you have a good relationship, it can be really tough for fathers and daughters. Girls go into puberty, dads get freaked out by their sexuality, girls get freaked out by their sexuality, dads don't want to touch their girls. Well, girls still need healthy masculine affection from their fathers, and if they don't get it, they'll try to find it somewhere. And so, you know, these are the kind of things that we'll talk about. And that's one of the reasons why we do 12 and older, is because we're going to be talking about some things that are pretty powerful that might not be appropriate for younger girls.
Not a good idea. So, Rick, when you talk about the girls now, what do you do something similar for your father and son conferences? Or
well,
your mother and son conferences? Because you do some of those too.
Well, we do actually, and it's interesting that you bring that up. That was, you know, I started this for, obviously, the name of the organization is Better Dads, and I really had the heart to, you know, inspire men to be more involved in the lives of their families. And so I just started doing workshops, and pretty quickly on, I've been doing it for 12 years now, eight years full-time ministry, and very quickly on, I had a school counselor approach me and say, you know, Rick, we have a lot of single moms raising boys in our district. Can you put something together? And I was like, no, I'm not really interested in working with women. I work with guys, you know. And he kept coming back and bothering me. And finally he said, you know, Rick, it's easier to raise a boy than to fix a man. And I thought, man, you know, just clearly God hit me upside the head with a 2x4. And so I put something together, and originally it was for single moms raising boys to become good men, but we had so many women that were married, so many women who didn't even have kids yet that wanted to find out how to talk to males, how to, you know, what respect looks like, all that kind of things. So we changed it to Courageous Moms Raising Boys to Become Good Men, and that program kind of exploded around the country. There was such a need for moms to want to understand, and that actually led to the publication of my first book. I was at a writer's conference, and a publisher was asking me what I do, and I said, that's what I do. And she said, well, we want a proposal on that. And I said, well, I'm not writing a book, I'm writing a novel. She's like, well, we're not interested in your novel, but we'd really like to have a proposal on that. So that's kind of how it all started, and it's kind of cascaded from there. So.
So what can a wife do? Let's go to an intact family. If you've got a husband who's not wanting to be a spiritual leader, I know a lot of women have that issue in their home. How do you encourage the guy to maybe get on track with that piece, or how do you keep your son or daughter moving forward with these really positive character traits without that in place.
And that is really hard, and that's probably the one thing that I hear most from women.
I bet it is.
How do I get my husband to be a spiritual leader? I wish my husband would lead more spiritually in the home. And that's a tough thing. Let me share a story with you, and I don't know that this is applicable to everybody, but this is a pretty good example, I think, of how powerful women can be. So I was speaking at a conference to a large group of women, and I was talking about my book, How to Talk So Your Husband Will Listen and Listen So Your Husband Will Talk. And I noticed that there was a young woman in the back that was crying virtually the whole time I was talking, which is, you know, never a good thing when you're a speaker. But and she looked, you know, she looked like she was kind of dressed kind of gothish, you know. She had dark clothing, dark eyes. And so anyway, afterwards, she came up and she was talking to me, and she said, you know, my husband, we have two little kids, and my husband won't come home after work. He goes out to the bars with his friends. I can't get him to be involved in the family at all. I can't get him to go to church. And I'm just beside myself, literally. You know, I think we're going to have to get a divorce because I don't know what to do. And you know, I don't know what to tell people when they come up with stories like that. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a pastor. And so I don't even really know what I told her. I know it wasn't very adequate because she was still crying when I left, and I felt kind of bad about that. And so about 6 months later, I was at a different event. I was speaking on a different subject, and I happened to notice that she was in the audience. And she looked great. And afterwards, she came up, and her whole countenance was different. She was, you know, bright and happy. And I said, she said, do you know who I am? And I said, yeah, I know who you are. And she said, do you remember I was the woman that came up and was crying because my husband wouldn't come home and wouldn't go to church? And I said, yeah, I remember that. I said, I don't remember what I told you, though. And she said, well, you told me to quit nagging my husband and start praying for him. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I didn't say that, you know, because I'm not that insensitive. And I didn't say that, but I said, well, how'd that work out for you? And she goes, I was so mad at you. She goes, but I had tried everything else. She said, so I thought I'd give it a try. And she said, the first month, nothing happened. She said, in the second month, he started coming home from work after work. Mm-hmm. And the third month, he started going to church with me without me asking him. She said, now it's been 6 months, and he leads the men's Bible study at our church.
Well, that was
and
a quick
turnaround.
Good job.
Man, that's a great story, isn't it?
That is a fabulous story. I love that.
That was beautiful, actually.
She really
just
changed her perspective, right? She wanted the same results, but she used her power as a woman in a more effective way instead of one that was ineffective. And so I think, you know, again, in my book, I outline a lot of how much power women have, especially with their words that they speak to the men in their lives. Women have a tremendous power to either lift up men to do things that they could never accomplish in their life, or literally to destroy them with sometimes with just a few words or even a raised eyebrow.
You know, I remember reading another book that said essentially that exact same thing. It was written by Peter, I think, called First or Second Peter, I'm not sure.
there's some good wisdom in there, isn't there?
Yeah. Have you read that? It sounds kind of like it.
I think it's in the book. I think I actually quote it in the book. So.
I'm sure you did.
Okay. Rick, you've got another book that'll be coming out.
I steal liberally from the Bible, so sometimes depending on the audience, I don't always quote my sources, but...
But there's wisdom there in them pages.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, it's funny because I'll be at a secular conference speaking, and somebody will come up afterwards and they'll go, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" And I'll go, "Yeah." And I'll go, "I thought you were because I could tell by what some of the stuff that you were saying." So, you know, the message is getting through, and I think and God's faithful to use you wherever He can. So.
So, Rick, let's take a couple of minutes right now because we'll run out of time here soon. And I want to hear about your new book. You've got another one that's called The Making of a Man that will be released when? And tell us about that, please.
Yeah, it's called The Man in the Making.
Man in the Making.
Successful Strategies to Helping Your Son Succeed in Life. And what I did was, because for me personally, my journey to come to Christ, I didn't have a lot of men that I looked up to or respected. And so what I did was I looked at the – I knew something was wrong with my life. I didn't know what. And so because I didn't have any men I respected, I looked at a bunch of men throughout history that I admired to kind of see what they had, what did they do that made their lives significant, right? And the only common denominator I could find between all these men I looked at was that they were all Christians. Well, that was a huge blow to my worldview, because I was raised in a home that said that Christians were hypocrites and religion was a crutch that weak people, you know, used. And so basically what I did then was took and studied Scripture for a year wanting to disprove it. And after a year, I found out that I couldn't, and so I had to accept Christ at that time. And so what I wanted to do with this book is I took 12 men throughout history who led great lives. You know, they weren't perfect, okay, because none of us are. They made mistakes just like everybody. And I did a bio on each one of them, and then I did a section on what character trait they were most associated with, and then wrote a little section on why that trait is important, and then I wrote a section on how to instill that in your son and put that all together. And I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a fun book. It's going to be an easy book for parents to read, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity to introduce some character traits and principles that are sorely needed in our culture.
Do you have a favorite character trait that you think is one of the possibly the most important for men?
Well, I do, and I you don't hear about it a lot, but I think perseverance is. Because perseverance is what makes the difference. You know, you can be intelligent, you can be all these great things, but if you don't persevere, and that's how men and boys learn, is we try something, we fail, we get back up, we try again until we succeed, and that's how we develop self-esteem, that's how we learn, and that's the problem I see in a lot, particularly with fatherless boys, is moms have a tendency to rescue boys real easy. Maybe they feel bad, maybe they feel guilty, and so boys never learn that character trait of perseverance. And what's one of the most difficult things in life? Marriage. How about raising a family? How tough is that? Well, working at a job you hate to feed your family. Well, boys that have been rescued too much, that don't learn to persevere, what happens the first time marriage is tough? They quit. First time raising a family becomes hard, they leave. I mean, I think perseverance is a key fundamental trait, and it's not one that we're really instilling in young men anymore.
Well, that's excellent wisdom on that, because I think you're true, and I think it goes for young men and young women. Too many of them are not, nothing's expected of them anymore, and so, oh well.
Well,
our culture is a little bit against this.
We've become a feelings-based culture, and instead of a principle-based culture. And I think for men in particular, males have to make decisions based on principles, not on emotions. It might be okay for a woman to make decisions based on emotions, but it's not for a man. There's too many times as a leader in my family, as a father, as a husband, I have to make decisions that people aren't happy about. But I have the ability to see further into the future and look at a bigger picture sometimes. And I have to be willing to have the courage to make those choices based on principle, regardless of how I feel about it, or you know, whether people are going to get mad at me or whatever. And that's not easy to do, but we have to make decisions based on principle. We have to do the right thing for the right reason, regardless of the consequences.
Well, Rick, we're sure enjoying talking to you today. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. And I'm going to ask Jeannie, do you have one more question you'd like to ask Rick?
I have a comment on what he just said. I believe that's important for men, but I think it's just as important for women. I think you just have to be in a place in your life where you're going to do what's right no matter what. So I think that's a great principle.
Yeah, I agree. Rick, what would you like to leave our listeners with this afternoon?
Well, the one thing I would like to leave with your male listeners is that it's never too late. You know, I've seen too many wonderful situations where men have been estranged from their children, I mean, I've had very difficult marriages that weren't working, and sometimes it's just a little tweak. Sometimes it's just a change of perspective. Sometimes it's just a little change of heart, and God does amazing things in these situations, and so I would just tell men to hang in there and do the right thing, persevere, have courage, and, you know, base your decisions based on principles, not emotions. Sometimes I don't feel like doing stuff, but sometimes there's been, over the 32 years I've been married, there's been times when I didn't feel like being married anymore, but, you know, the right thing was to do it, and I've been blessed because of it.
Well, thank you, Rick, for blessing our audience today.
Thank
you. We admire the work that you're involved in and pray that the Lord continues to multiply and bless your efforts. And listeners, please consider going to one of Rick's conferences. Check him out at betterdads.net. And he's got lots of resources there and lots of opportunities for you to hear him speak. So God bless you, and we'll be tuning in next week.
All right. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.